Welcome, everyone. Thanks for attending this session. Like Nicole mentioned, this is going to be a very basic but also a very broad type of presentation, because I know the audience could be some people who are new to advocacy, but there might be some people who have been working in advocacy for a little while. And I'm going to try to cover as much material in this like short 45 minutes to an hour as possible. So please bear with me if some of this information is not new to you, but I'm trying to provide the most information as possible in this short session. A little bit about ChangeLab Solutions. We are a law and policy organization, and what we do is provide assistance to communities who are trying to innovate, who are trying to create different types of policies that will create more livable and just better communities across the country. And so we are very involved with just a lot of different types of policies across the country, and mainly about public health and working with different types of policies, integrating public health in every single policy that a community is trying to address. couple disclaimers real quick, and this is something we have to do over time. So I'm an attorney, but this presentation is for informational purposes only, so I don't create any type of attorney-client privilege with you guys. Feel free to ask me any types of questions, but I'm not technically providing any legal advice today. And also, ChangeLab Solutions, we are a 501c3 nonprofit organization, so anything I say today is not intended to provide any type of opinion on legislation. We're just trying to provide as much information to you folks as possible. Okay. So kind of the overview is that I'm going to go over kind of the basics of lobbying, just to give you a feel of what are the definitions of lobbying. So that way, if you are out there advocating, you know when you might be lobbying and when you need to maybe step back and not, if you're not allowed to do any lobbying activities, then you can kind of step back. But most of this presentation is going to be about, you know, what can you do with federal funding, what can you do with foundation dollars, because there's a lot you can do without actually engaging in lobbying activities. And I'm going to provide a couple examples here today, and there, you know, I'm going to provide as much time as possible for your questions. And just one final note before we really jump into things. I'm going to probably mention this a few times today, but I feel like it's really important for you that if you do feel like your activity is getting into more of a lobbying activity, just based on what we talked about today, it's really important to consult your legal counsel, whether it's your county counsel or your city attorney or your general counsel for your organization. Because everyone's situation is going to be a little bit different. Like a lot of organizations and government entities, we have multiple types of financing that's helping us do our programs. And because of that fact, there's always some sort of restriction on different types of funding that we're dealing with. And it's just important to either contact, you know, your contracts department or your legal counsel, just to make sure that with each source of funding that you're dealing with, you know, you're just kind of staying within the rules with that type of funding. And, you know, at ChangeLab Solutions, you know, we're funded through multiple sources, and I'm always advising our staff on how we are trying to comply with each type of source. And everything is always a little bit different. So, you know, if you have any questions, you know, I encourage you to ask your legal counsel or your contracts department about your specific source of funding. Okay, so the first thing that I want to emphasize is that all governments and nonprofit organizations are allowed to lobby. This might sound strange because a lot of times you're not permitted to lobby based on your funding, but at the basis of everything, every government entity and every nonprofit organization is allowed to lobby. The reason why most people are not allowed to lobby is because your source of funding is tied to some either legal restriction or your funder just doesn't want you to use their funding for lobbying. And that is very common. And so for the most part, most organizations, most government entities don't do a lot of lobbying just because their funding source is restricted. But that doesn't mean if you're using a very, I don't want to say it's just maybe a neutral source of funding, you can do lobbying activities with that. The most important thing is always to make sure that if you are going to be doing lobbying activities, you're just kind of following the rules so that your source of funding is not jeopardized when you do lobbying activities. Okay. So what is lobbying? There's basically two different types of lobbying. There's direct lobbying and there's grassroots lobbying. They're very similar, it's just one has a different type of audience. So direct lobbying is kind of the typical type of lobbying that most of you probably just envision. It's generally approaching legislators, government officials, about specific legislation that you want them to address. And in terms of direct lobbying under the federal rules and a lot of the IRS rules, most of the time direct lobbying involves you discussing, having a direct communication with that elected official or government official about specific legislation and you providing your opinion about that specific piece of legislation. In terms of like trying to figure out whether or not you are actually lobbying, because I'm going to go through a lot of exceptions through this presentation. I'm not going through a lot of activities that are actually lobbying. And at the end of the presentation, you might get a little confused because these non-lobbying activities can be very close to lobbying activities, and there's very small differences between a lobbying activity and non-lobbying activity. But a couple just things to keep in mind about lobbying activities. One is that, you know, most of the time lobbying activities require someone to approach the government official or elected official. If the elected official is coming to you, sometimes that may not be lobbying when you're talking to them about specific legislation. Most of the time it's someone trying to approach an elected official or government official to try to persuade them to vote on a particular issue, or you're trying to persuade them to think about a policy or specific legislation in a particular way, and you're trying to influence them on that type of decision. So, you know, that's a very kind of common sense type of lobbying. I think, you know, when people start talking about the rules around lobbying, I think, you know, because these definitions get there's a lot of minutia about these rules. Some people forget kind of what the basics of lobbying are. I mean, lobbying is kind of traditional lobbying where you're going out there and trying to change someone's mind about a piece of legislation. Grassroots lobbying is very similar. It's the contrast between direct lobbying and grassroots lobbying is that when you're direct lobbying, you're actually approaching a government official, you're actually approaching an elected official, someone within the government body who is going to play a role in that formulation of legislation, or they're drafting the legislation, or they're going to vote on that legislation. So that's direct lobbying. Grassroots lobbying, most of you have probably seen like petitions, you know, call to actions, where you're trying to get the public to come out, and then the public is going to try to influence their legislator or their government officials to take some sort of action on a specific piece of legislation. So direct lobbying and grassroots lobbying in terms of the activities are very similar. You're trying to influence the outcome of specific legislation. It's just for grassroots lobbying, your target is the public who then will then, on your behalf, try to influence a legislator on their on that specific piece of legislation that you're looking at. Question? Yeah, that would be the same as direct lobbying. If you on your own initiative went to a city council meeting and there was a specific piece of legislation you were looking at, and then you went and spoke and talked and just kind of gave your opinion about that legislation. Now I'm going to go through some exceptions about why sometimes that type of public testimony is not lobbying, but just on that kind of basic premise where you just on your own initiative go and try to talk to legislators or voice your opinion to the legislators directly, that would be lobbying. Okay. I'm going to go through some of the few common restrictions on lobbying. There are many, many different types of restrictions on lobbying. And I'm just going to go through some of the major ones today just to kind of give you a feel about why many, you know, public health agencies and nonprofit organizations can't use their funding for lobbying purposes. And so these are sort of the major restrictions on lobbying. Okay, the first one is on government grants. How many here receive some sort of federal funding? Okay, good portion. If you look, let me ask a follow-up question. How many of you have read your contract with the federal government agency? Nobody. Okay. Not a problem. I mean, I think most of you, if you've received federal funding, there's probably someone else who has reviewed and looked at that type of federal funding. But this is why I'm here today. I'm just trying to give you some information about your contracts probably with the federal government. I would say, 9 out of 10, probably even 10 out of 10 federal contracts have some sort of provision that restrict you from lobbying. They just basically say that there are no lobbying activities allowed with your federal funding. And it's very common. There are a lot of different types of federal funding, but pretty much you can't use your federal funding dollars to go out and then engage in lobbying activities. Now, the one exception that you need to think about is that because a lot of organizations are funded through multiple sources of funding, you know, whatever non-federal contract dollars that you have, those dollars potentially could be used for lobbying activities. And it really depends on how you're funded, and it depends on what type of organization you are. But it is possible that you could do some lobbying activities if you're not going, as long as you don't use that federal source of funding. How many of you have funding through a foundation? Okay, another part of the room. Okay. And again, just out of you folks, how many of you have read your grant agreements? A couple of you? Okay, great. Foundations have, because they are tax-exempt organizations, under the IRS rules, they are not allowed to do any lobbying activities. Now, whether a foundation wants to pass on that restriction to their grantees is sort of up to them. But from all the grants that I've seen, I would say a majority of foundations sort of in their grant agreements also restrict lobbying with their foundation dollars. And so it's really important that if you do receive a grant, they're usually not too long. Foundation grant agreements are generally maybe about 5 pages long versus federal contracts that are, 20, 30, 50 pages long. So take a look at your grant. And if there's somewhere a provision that says you can't do any lobbying with those foundation dollars, then, you know that this is sort of restricted funding. Some foundations actually don't say anything. The grant agreement might be silent. They're just not going to, they're going to provide you with some core funding, but they're not going to restrict on basically how you're going to use it. Then in that instance, you probably could use some of those dollars for lobbying purposes if you wanted to. But please pay attention to your grant agreement, because that's kind of where you'll find out whether or not you're staying in compliance with your grant agreement. Kind of the rest of the presentation, so I went through the basics of lobbying. So that's what direct lobbying, grassroots lobbying, hopefully you just have a good sense of whether or not, some of the activities that you may be engaging in are lobbying. For the most part, for the rest of the presentation, I'm going to be talking about either exceptions to lobbying or what is actually not a lobbying activity at all. And there's a small distinction between what an exception is and what like a non-lobbying activity is. And let me go through sort of all these different examples, and then I'll try to navigate like what the difference between the exception and then what a non-lobbying activity is. Okay. One of the major exceptions to the lobbying rules is organizations who do a lot of research. They provide reports based on that research, and those reports are considered to be nonpartisan analysis or research or studies. And this is a very important, I think, exception for public health advocates, because a lot of our organizations do a substantial amount of research. We do a lot of scientific research, or we do a lot of just social science studies, or just in the public health realm, we do a lot of research. And especially for the public health realm versus other types, I would say, of nonprofit advocacy, public health has an enormous amount of information that's available. And there's a lot of evidence out there in terms of what is backing our activities. And so if you are engaging in some sort of nonpartisan report, you are allowed to have an opinion on specific policies or even on specific legislation. And so this is a very big exception that the CDC uses, and it's a very big exception for the IRS. So let me kind of walk through what it means to be nonpartisan, and then I'm going to come back and talk about why you can then have your own opinion on specific legislation. Okay. First thing, to be nonpartisan, you need to have an independent, balanced, and objective type of report. What does that mean? You need to be fair to both sides of the issue. Partisan basically just means, I'm not talking about just being politically partisan, but partisan in a report just means that you are only addressing one side of an issue versus the other. There might, if you are researching, you know, let's say like tobacco studies or something like that, you have to address all of the issues that's surrounding the different types of health outcomes you're looking at, the different types of policies, and the pros and cons on why specific policies that you think are important are backed by the type of information. A partisan report generally is one that just looks at one side of the issue. They kind of look at what's favorable for their conclusion, but just doesn't address the other types of evidence out there or the other types of research. Another important thing is, even though at the end of your report you may have a conclusion about why a specific policy is very important, or you have a conclusion about why a certain type of activity is unhelpful, that is perfectly fine. You can have your own conclusion based on all of the information that you provided to the reader. Now, at the same time, a nonpartisan report allows the reader to draw his or her own conclusion. And the reason is just people might disagree with you. But that is the purpose of some sort of nonpartisan report. It's just to provide a lot of information out there and allows people to then read the information, and they can either agree with you or disagree with you, but you're giving them that option. So, question? Right. Right, yeah. So let me give you a quick example. You know, there's a lot of debate whether or not smoking should be banned in public places. And, you know, our organization, we work on helping cities craft ordinances that could ban smoking in public places. Now, there's a enormous amount of research on the negative health effects of secondhand smoke. But on a counterbalance to a lot of these policies is that, you know, a lot of people have argued that banning smoking in public places will have a negative economic harm to the community. The communities will lose jobs, businesses, revenues will go down. And so that is a factor that if you're going to do some sort of report, looking at banning smoking in public places, you have to take into account all of the circumstances around that policy. So that would include all the health effects, even the negative economic consequences of secondhand smoke, like, you know, healthcare and things like that. But also, you have to just, you know, if there's research out there that is showing that banning smoking in public places does reduce a business's revenue, then you also just need to include that and give the reader a chance to just weigh that option. You know, at the end of the day, you know, when they weigh the two different sides of the issue, they're probably going to side with you because of the enormous amount of research on the, you know, secondhand smoke research versus the other research that we've looked at that's pretty sparse, but it's out there. But it's not really it's not really on your job to kind of dictate what the reader should conclude. You just sort of need to allow the reader to just make their own conclusion. Another important thing is that your conclusion at the end of the report needs to be supported by the facts and the evidence that's actually in your report. You can't just provide a lot of scientific evidence and then at your conclusion is just basically your own personal opinion about the issue, but you don't draw a link between the evidence and the facts and then your conclusion. Unsupported opinions is considered to be a lobbying activity if you're just telling people your unsupported opinion. And the last one is that your reports are intended to be Can anyone read the bottom? Yeah, okay. Is supposed to be broadly distributed to the entire public. You're not trying to hide the ball from advocates or, you know, your opponents or anything like that. You know, these reports are nonpartisan. They're just for everyone's information. They're actually for everyone's education. So that's the important factor, I think, in terms of these reports, is that, you know, they're for educational purposes. They're allowed to allow the public more information so that they can make their own decisions about what's going on in kind of public health policy. And so just kind of looping it around back to lobbying activities, you know, without this exception, telling a legislator what you think about a, like, let's go back to the tobacco, public bans on smoking. You know, if you're going to go talk to a elected official or even just a government official about why it's important to ban smoking, you know, that's a specific legislative proposal that you're talking to them about because you want to ban smoking in public places. And, you know, just talking to that government official, the elected official, you know, that's a lobbying activity. But what this does is if you've done your research, you've done a lot of, you know, background information, and you've come to a conclusion about why it's very important to ban smoking in public places, you can then provide that report to an elected official and say, listen, you know, banning smoking in public places is really important because you can provide a conclusion, you know, these three different points, but this is the report that we provided. This is all the scientific research that is telling us that secondhand smoke is bad, and if we get rid of smoking in public places, it will improve public health outcomes. And so this kind of exception to lobbying is actually really helpful for public health advocates. And the last thing I want to mention about this is that how many of you actually do your own research, like your organization does its own research? And how many of you are just kind of just public health officials, or actually you're just community-based organizations that work with the communities? Okay, so it's half and half. You know, for organizations that do their own research, you can actually help advocates by providing this information to advocates, because what the advocates can do is take this information and present it to elected officials or to other just government officials. For folks who are advocates out there, you know, you don't actually have to do your own research, but the research you have to do is to sort of collect and congregate all the research that is out there and then provide some sort of, you know, maybe 5-page executive summary that looks at all of the information out, all of the research that's out there, and provides the reader some sort of summary of the evidence that's either for or against, let's just say, you know, go back to just, you know, banning smoking in public places. So it doesn't, this exception doesn't require you to do your own research. You can do your own research, but if you are a researcher, you can also provide this information to advocates who can then take that on for you if you're not going to do any advocacy or lobbying. Okay, another one of the exceptions to lobbying, and this goes back to your question, is about talking directly to a either a legislative body, a committee of a legislative body, or just the government body itself. And many times, you know, government bodies like cities or counties, you know, they don't have all the staff available to do every single piece of work that is needed, especially if they're formulating policy. So the classic example of this exception is when, you know, a congressional subcommittee asks you to come in and provide testimony because they're trying to figure out the health consequences of asbestos or something like that. You know, even though you will be providing your opinion, you're not providing them with any nonpartisan report or anything like that, even though you could if you wanted to, but your job is just to come in and provide testimony to this subcommittee. And just based on the kind of rules that we're talking about, you know, you're talking to elected officials, you're reflecting a view about different policies or specific legislative proposals, you know, this is lobbying. But the IRS and the federal government itself, I want to say the the Office of Management and Budget, they've created this exception where, you know, nonprofit organizations, other government agencies can come and talk to a elected body if they're invited to come out and talk. And so what we usually call this is a request for technical assistance. And usually it's some sort of written documentation that where this elected body or committee comes to you, they initiate the communication, and they ask you to come testify. But it's not limited to just testifying at a committee. A lot of times government bodies or even subcommittees will ask for actual help drafting their legislation. And that's okay too, as long as you have some sort of written documentation that this body asked you to come and help them with this very technical part of coming up with the legislation. One of the things that's, do you have a question? Yes. So the difference is when the council just is opening it up for public opinion, they are asking, it's just kind of like a call to just public, but they're not really asking anyone for like technical advice on that piece of legislation. They're just looking for opinion on whether they like it or they don't, or kind of what are the problems with that piece of legislation that they're looking at. It's just sort of like the city council issues a press release saying that we're inviting the public to come comment on our pending piece of legislation. If you're a public organization, you come out and then speak, give your opinion about that piece of legislation, then that would be a lobbying activity. Because the request for is not directed solely at your organization. If a committee, if someone from the mayor's, like let's say from a city council, if the city manager knows your organization is an expert on a particular issue, and then they ask you, we want you to come and give a presentation to the city council about this legislation, about this policy that you're an expert on, can you come out and talk to us about it? In that case, where that request is directed particularly at your organization because they want your specific technical expertise, then you can provide your opinion about that legislation because that's what they want to know. Because you're an expert in the field, they want you to come in and talk to them. But if it's just kind of an open call and then you go on sort of your own initiative to just speak out, then that would be a lobbying activity. One caveat to that is that, even if you do respond to that sort of open call for public testimony, if you've done a lot of research, like I was talking about in terms of doing a nonpartisan report, if you want to kind of create that report for them, like some sort of nonpartisan report that looks at all the different issues, but you draw your conclusion based on all the research, you can submit that, to the entire city council so that all of them can read your report and see what your conclusion is. And that would not be lobbying because of this exception for doing nonpartisan research analysis and studies. And so it really is just kind of crafting one of the things that, we have sometimes difficulty with is like if there is that open call, a lot of times there's not enough time to kind of come up with a new report about this piece of legislation. And so then you just have to kind of weigh like whether or not you do want to do some lobbying activities or whether you have something maybe archived that's a report that you can take and then sort of tweak a little bit and present it to the city council. So that's a possibility too. But you have to just kind of sort of deal with the situation by situation. And then one last thing about providing technical assistance to legislative bodies or government bodies. The important thing to remember is that a lot of times an elected official knows your organization, loves your organization, wants your organization to really help out. But technical assistance is given to the entire legislative body or the entire committee or the entire government body. The request can't just come from one elected official and then you provide technical assistance just to that one elected official. The important thing about technical assistance is that it's supposed to be open to the public, that it is for everyone to read, and so that your report or your testimony to the entire committee is just sort of open to the public. So if an elected official asks you to provide technical assistance, one of the things is that you just need to ask them, okay, can your chair of the committee please just provide me some sort of written request? Or if it's from like the entire city council, if it's like the mayor or the president of the board, one of those people who can speak on behalf of the entire board has to provide that request. The other types of staff, you know, there's a lot of legislative aid staff who actually work for the entire committee. Sometimes those staff members can ask for the request because they can speak on behalf of the entire committee. But for a technical assistance request, it has to come from the entire body. Okay. This is another kind of quasi-exception because it's not, I don't like to call it like when a city staff member talks to their elected officials it's not really lobbying, but, you know, from an outsider's perspective or even from the federal government, sometimes they do think of that as lobbying. So one of the major exceptions to lobbying is when a government official, you know, if you're a public health official, staff member, or, you know, you're part of the Parks and Rec or something like that, if you go talk to your elected officials or the elected officials come talk to you, you know, that's not lobbying. That's just doing the business of government. Government entities just have to be able to communicate with each other about policies, about legislation, just about the normal functions of government. And so if within your own government, if you're part of the executive staff or if you're just part of the program staff and you're talking to your legislative body, either whether it's the city council, board of supervisors, or even someone in assembly, if it's within your own kind of government entity, you're freely allowed to talk to them about any type of, you know, legislation, and it won't be lobbying. So just like a couple examples that, you know, we usually see is that a lot of public health officials are talking to their elected officials about what's going on in the public health arena. They're talking to them about obesity issues. They're talking to them about tobacco issues. They're constantly talking to their elected officials about public health policy. And so if you have some sort of ordinance that you want to then take to your elected officials or just talk to them about it, that's okay for you to do as long as you're within that government entity. So whether it's, you know, banning smoking in public places or, you know, maybe a bicycle ordinance or something like that, you can talk to your government official or just your elected officials about those issues. Similarly, if you're a county planner, you know, those people have to always talk to their elected boards about, or appointed boards, about zoning issues. They have to talk to them about what's going on in the city, whether zoning, you know, the zoning needs to be changed. It's just kind of part of the government function. And so if you're a government employee and you have an elected officials, don't be afraid to talk to your elected officials about policies. Okay, I'm going to go through a few examples of activities that are not lobbying. And so the kind of differences when we went through those past few examples, if you went through the definition of lobbying, without these exceptions, those types of communications with government officials would be lobbying, just based on the kind of standard definition of lobbying. The only thing is that, you know, within either the Internal Revenue Code or a lot of just the federal contract rules, you know, those activities are not lobbying as long as you kind of fall within the rules that they've created for the exceptions. But these are sort of policy-related activities, and my organization engages a lot in a lot of these activities because they're just not lobbying activities. They might be advocacy, they might be educational, but they're just not lobbying. One of the things that we do a lot is educational campaigns. We go out to communities, we go even talk to government officials, and we talk to them about public health issues. And, you know, sometimes that may refer to, you know, other types of legislation that has been passed. You know, so a lot of times we'll talk about, you know, the portion control law that was passed in New York, or we'll talk about the soda tax that's in Richmond, and we'll talk about those things, But it's more about education, and the main crux that we're doing is we're just talking about public health in general. And we may refer to different pieces of legislation that are out there, but we just don't really encourage people to whether or not that particular policy is right for them. We just kind of educate the public about what's going on. And so if you're doing some sort of educational campaign about health policies, that is not a lobbying activity. Even if you are encouraging those participants about the health policies, there has to be some portion control or whatever policy you think is the most important. It's all inclusive education. And so if your main purpose is education, that's not a lobbying activity. One of the things that we also get involved with is just sharing best practices, because a lot of my staff were, former government attorneys, or we've worked in different types of government situations. We take some of the best practices that's out there, and then we share that information with other government entities who might be interested in that type of practice. And that's not a lobbying activity. You're not telling the other government officials whether or not they should adopt these types of policies. You're just kind of sharing the information, and that's not a lobbying activity. How many of you are involved with some sort of coalition or regional coalition? Okay, a lot of you. A few government officials and also nonprofit organizations have been a little concerned about, being involved in coalitions, because a lot of times coalitions do involve elected officials. They do involve government officials, just regular city staff or county staff. And then just part of the coalition, you're talking about policies all the time. But being part of a coalition or just forming a coalition is not in itself lobbying. What would be the difference? If you are at some sort of roundtable or a coalition meeting, and then a group of you sort of identify the elected officials and start picking on them and telling them they need to go pass some sort of legislation, then yeah, you probably are moving towards a lobbying activity. But most coalition building is kind of like what I was talking about. It's educational, it's sharing best practices, it's looking at a lot of different types of policy options. It's just kind of getting the stakeholders in a room and talking about, what should or shouldn't we do about this particular issue. And forming a coalition is not going to be a lobbying activity unless you sort of make that jump into actually trying to encourage one of the members to actually pass the legislation. Even if that legislative member asks, okay, maybe I do want to adopt some sort of ordinance, and they ask for someone's assistance with that, that doesn't automatically jump you into a lobbying activity. It really depends. And so I would encourage you, if you are kind of, doing coalition building, to keep doing it, because that is not a lobbying activity. And I know there's been a lot of concern across the country about whether or not that type of activity gets you into trouble with either the federal government or the IRS. Yeah, I think it depends on what the coalition's role in terms of the grassroots organizing is going to be. And so if you're just providing the support for building the capacity of other organizations to do grassroots organizing, that itself is not going to get you into trouble with lobbying. It's whether or not you take that extra step and then you're actually providing a lot of the, like a petition. If you're actually creating a petition that's going to go out and then hand that out to the public, then, right, that would be grassroots lobbying. The coalition would then be grassroots lobbying, because you're trying to encourage the public to actually speak out or, contact the legislator on a specific piece of legislation. But a lot of grassroots organizing is very diverse. Sometimes it does deal with, specific policies. And then you need to think about whether or not you want to engage in grassroots lobbying or not. But a lot of times organizing could just be outreach to the community, you know, sort of public information campaigns. And, you know, if you're not asking them to go out and contact their legislator about a particular issue, if you're just providing them information about either a ballot initiative or an ordinance that's affecting them, you're just providing them information, you're just kind of getting community organized around a particular issue. If you're just providing them with the information, that's not an actual lobbying. Grassroots lobbying requires you to also ask that person to go contact their legislator. So just think about the different steps that you're taking in terms of organizing, and then if you're getting to the point where you need those people to go contact their legislator to change their minds about a specific piece of legislation, then that's when you're grassroots lobbying, and that's where you need to think about whether you can engage in that activity with the sources that you have. Can you repeat that last part?
So if you're kind of assigning staff person, you're having them to provide testimony at a city council meeting where they're voting on whether or not they're going to pass the ordinance.
You know, it also, that's a really close call. I would say it depends how you approach the folks in part of your coalition or your community. I guess it's two things. One is if these people don't know anything about the council member and you're providing them information, you're telling them you want them, you're calling them out to go talk to the city council about this issue, then yes, that's grassroots lobbying. If you're out there as a resource and these people are already, they kind of already know somehow that this meeting is going on or it's an issue that's really important to them, and they're asking you, like, you know, what is this issue about? Can I get more information about this issue? Then you can provide them with information about what's going on, and you can provide them your opinion, you know, but, you know, it kind of depends on what you're doing. If you're encouraging them to come out to this city council meeting to come out and either protest or to support an ordinance, then you're grassroots lobbying. You're trying to get them out there. But if you're just out there as a resource, you're just part of a coalition, you're just providing the information, then you're not getting them to go out and lobby. This sort of kind of goes back to the nonpartisan sort of research analysis and reports. So what Changelab Solutions does a lot is we actually draft model ordinances. And, you know, this is available on our website. If, you know, city council members, county supervisors, public health officials want an example of what a good model policy looks like, then they can take a look at what we've drafted. And the reason why, like, you know, and we do this in two functions. I mean, we put this on our website. It's just out there for anyone's download information. And so all we're doing is just kind of sharing what we think about, you know, different types of policies. It's not really directed to an elected official. We're not going out there and talking to them directly, but it's just available for the public. Sometimes, though, is that we do get asked to kind of come out and talk to elected officials about these issues. And so part of what our model ordinance is that, you know, we have a report or we have some sort of research that has already backed up why we've concluded that this particular model ordinance would be the most effective at alleviating some sort of public health issue. And we kind of put it together as a package. We do share it sometimes with elected officials or government officials if we need to. But all of our model ordinances are based on evidence. You know, we've read, like, you know, CDC reports. We've read, you know, research from different public health institutions, universities. We looked at these studies. And then based on all the evidence, we've crafted ordinances that we think would then help with these particular public health issues. And so if your organization is interested in something like that, you know, that's just kind of fall back to that nonpartisan report. You know, always look to see what research is out there, what evidence is out there that is supporting my position. And again, I just want to remind you, I mean, you do need to take both sides into account, and that's what we do too. We always research all the sides of an issue, especially public health issues. And some public health issues are very controversial. So we look at all sides of the issue, we package that into a report, and then if someone wants our model ordinance and they want us to come talk to them about it, we provide them with a report that shows them all sides of the issue and our conclusion and what our model policy looks like. Other allowed activities, you know, would be education. Education is not a lobbying activity. I mean, and most organizations are very involved with education, and so that's never a lobbying activity. Communicating to the public about health risks and consequences, even though that, you know, it might scare them into a particular taking some sort of particular action. You know, if you're not talking about specific legislation out there, you're not asking them to go to contact their legislator, you can talk about health risks and the consequences. And the other thing is working with the private sector. If you are working with different private sector, like corporations, healthcare institutions, about changes that need to be made, that's not a lobbying activity because, you know, the government is just not involved. Lobbying always requires some sort of government entity, and if you're not dealing with a government entity, then it's just not lobbying. Okay. So does anyone have any questions or follow-up? Okay. So the next thing I want to do is just kind of take a five-minute break, because I know that was a lot of information. It was really dense. Is that I have this hypothetical exercise, and let's just take 5 minutes. Feel free to, you know, talk to the person next to you, but I want you to just look at these questions, and there's three of them, and, you know, we'll come back and I'll go through these questions, but I just want you to just kind of do a mental exercise and think about whether or not any of these activities are lobbying. Okay. So we'll come back in about 5 minutes. Okay. So does everyone know all the right answers for these? Okay. So let's do a poll. For the first question, how many of you say yes? Can you use federal funds for this activity? How many say no? Okay, we're going to go through all the answers. For the second part, may the health department discuss the model legislation with your county supervisor? Can you use the CDC grant to pay for your staff to do that? Yeah? Okay, anyone say no? Okay. So for the last one, could you use the CDC grant to pay for your staff time to go communicate with cities about their policies, health policies? How many say yes? Yeah, model legislation. How many say no? Okay. So let's take the first one. So may the health department develop model legislation for banning smoking in public places? And I think most of you said yes. Yes. You need to look at what the CDC is funding you to do. But if the CDC is giving you either discretion or a very broad scope of work to engage in some sort of public health policy, then you can use those funds to create model legislation. And then you can also, going to the second part, if you need to talk to the elected officials, your own elected officials, you need to talk to other departments within the county, you can allocate the CDC grant to some of your staff time to pay for those types of activities. And that is within one of the exceptions to lobbying, and it would be perfectly permissible. This last question is very tricky. And if you do engage in talking to other jurisdictions using federal money, and you're talking to them specifically about legislation that they may want to pass or maybe they don't want to pass, I would caution you to talk to your legal counsel and be very careful about this last one. So one of the exceptions that we went through is, a staff member of a government entity talking to an elected official within their own government. And that's just part of doing business of the government. You're talking to other people within your own government. But when you kind of leave your own government and start talking to other government officials, it could be a city, it could be the state, it could be the federal government, and you're using federal dollars to pay for that staff time, that is potential lobbying if you're talking to them about specific legislative proposals. And like what I kind of put up on the screen beforehand about model policies or model legislation, once you start talking to other jurisdictions about what might be good or not good for them, you're getting into a lobbying activity. And right now there's no exception for one government entity to freely talk to another government entity that's not, they're completely different, separate government entities about specific legislation. The law is not, the federal law right now is a little unclear whether or not you can, go out and just talk to other cities about, these types of specific legislative proposals. In the CDC guidelines, how many of you got the handout? Downloaded the handout on the CDC guidelines. If you go to the APHA conference website, I believe you can download the CDC guidelines. And if you can't find it there, you guys can email me, and I'll email you the CDC guidelines. But the CDC guidelines kind of go through what you can and can't do with their either grant funding or if you're a contractor with the CDC. And one of the things they specifically mention is that while it is completely permissible for government officials to talk to each other within their own government, it's lobbying, what they consider the basic definition of lobbying, communicating to other government officials about specific legislative proposals is not an allowable cost for those government agencies and for nonprofit organizations. And so you need to sort of be careful about whether you're actually talking to someone within your own government, and then when you're in the coalition setting, or if you're at a conference, just sort of be mindful about, you know, what is the topic of the conversation. And if the conversation starts getting into, you know, we think you should pass this type of ordinance because it would be really good for your community, if you're referring to a specific piece of legislation or a model legislation that maybe you've adopted or something like that, then you're getting into the area of lobbying. And so for the last part, be very careful. Question? Yeah. Right. Yeah. It just basically comes down to your cost that you're reporting back to the federal government, and so if the model legislation was developed with federal funds, that's completely okay. That's not really would not be relevant to whether or not that would be a lobbying activity. But what it does take into account is the allocation to your staff time. And so if you are using this CDC grant to pay for your staff time to then go talk to other jurisdictions about good model policy or model legislation or trying to get the cities within the county's jurisdiction to pass policies, then under the current federal guidelines on, basically federal grants, that would be a lobbying activity. But like in your example, if you used other sources of funding, let's say it's just from the general fund, if it's maybe from a state grant that didn't have any restrictions, then yeah, your staff could then go out and talk to these communities and not have to worry about the restrictions. The restrictions are solely based on the federal grant funding. So if you were to look at the CDC grant, if you're a recipient or a sub-recipient, then you may have seen it before, AR-12. AR-12 is a CDC sort of policy on lobbying, and that restricts all recipients of CDC funding from doing any type of lobbying activities, and there are certain exceptions that they mention in the AR-12, but for the most part, you know, if you receive a CDC grant, you can't do any lobbying activities, and that includes paying for your staff time to go talk about model policies. And so that's where, you know, if you are going to be speaking outside of your own kind of jurisdiction, that's when you need to kind of step back, do an analysis, figure out whether or not you can do this activity with that type of funding that you want to allocate. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. How many people have sort of heard rumors about Section 503? And okay. If you're not familiar with Section 503, I'm going to do a little background. So Section 503 is a particular section in the Appropriations Bill for Health and Human Services. And Section 503 for, 30 years was sort of the same language every single year. Was never changed. It basically said you cannot do any lobbying activities that would lobby within, you know, state or federal governments. And then Section 503 was substantially changed last year last December when they passed the appropriations bill. And it basically said you can't do any you can't communicate with anyone about legislative proposals to any branch of government, any local government, using federal funds. And it was very vague, and it was somewhat hard to follow. And so, you know, it caused a lot of confusion with a lot of, county governments, state governments, because they weren't sure whether or not they were actually lobbying. And to be honest, like, even the CDC was confused about how this was written, so they're not sure either. I have heard that the CDC has told some people that they shouldn't use certain words like policy. They don't like the word campaign. They don't like the word legislation. And you know what I think it's a very case by case basis. And so sort of maybe what I try to tell people and especially my staff about kind of two things when working with the federal grant. The number one thing that the CDC is concerned about is they're concerned about accuracy. And so they don't want their grantees to be sort of using words that may trigger some sort of political reaction to the activity, even though there could have been maybe better words to use for that type of activity. So like the word, I use educational campaign a lot. But the CDC is like, well, is it really a campaign? How do we know that it's not a political campaign? And they've given some people a hard time about that. But and so they've asked, can you use different words? And what I take from that is that it's one thing is that if you are doing policy work and you're working with government officials about policy work, you know, just be very descriptive about what you did. And as long as you basically tell them that you weren't lobbying, maybe you were talking about policy, but it wasn't lobbying. You know, you should be very honest about what you're doing with doing with CDC grant funds. The other thing is sort of like to be kind of sensitive to the CDC is one of the things we have to be mindful of is that the CDC and basically the Department of Health and Human Services has come under, you know, a lot of attacks from Congress. And you know, and it's mainly because the Affordable Care Act is a particularly controversial piece of legislation, and there's just a lot of heated arguments, battles, whatever you want to call it, right now in Capitol Hill. So the CDC is, you know, they're kind of responding to a lot of these sort of just responding to a lot of the animosity around the Affordable Care Act. You know, whether you're in for it or against it, it's just that, you know, the CDC is right in the middle. And because it's right in the middle of everything, you know, everything gets swept up. And so if a congressperson just feels like you're lobbying or violating the rules in terms of using CDC funding, you know, they're scrutinizing that a little bit more. And so we just have to be mindful that when you're reporting back to the CDC, you know, just be very honest with what you did with the money. And I would, you know, I always encourage my staff, if you're writing a report back to the CDC about what you did, you know, you never lie. You don't, if policy is the right word to use, you use the word policy. If you, you know, were doing, if like, for example, we provide sometimes consulting services to county health departments on legislation. And they've asked us to come in and help them draft legislation. Well, you know, the scope of work that we have says assisting them with legislation. And so if we were to report back to them, and that report goes back to the CDC, that we did something different with that funding than what the scope of work said, you know, we can get in trouble for not actually completing the scope of work. So, you know, always look at your scope of work or what the grant says. You know, if what you did was some sort of revolved around policy, I don't think policy is a dirty word. It's just, you know, just try to be very accurate about what the activity was and what the scope of work was. Okay. So, you know, just kind of like looping back to, you know, before you kind of engage in any lobbying or advocacy activity, it's always just good to step back and just ask yourself a few quick questions. I mean, one is, you know, what activities can you do without lobbying? And so I went through a few activities that weren't lobbying, and I also went through some exceptions to lobbying. And if you can fit your activity with some of those exceptions or an activity that's not lobbying, then you don't even have to worry about whether or not you're lobbying. And so just kind of think about that. Just go through the process and just think about whether or not that could apply to you. Some, you know, to be honest, sometimes it's not. Sometimes you do want to go out and do lobbying activities. And if that's the case, then you have to find the resources to go out and do that lobbying activity. But I would say 80% of the time, 90% of the time, you can do your activities without actually engaging lobbying. if you are going to do lobbying activities, you have to make sure that you're complying with all the rules. There's a lot of rules with lobbying. In addition to the federal rules, like the CDC rules, there are state laws on lobbying. A lot of times if you're going to go out and lobby, you have to register with the state as a lobbyist. And so you have to make sure that you're complying with your own particular state laws on lobbying. And also local. I mean, if you're a county health official or even if you're in a city, a lot of counties actually have policies about lobbying. And, you know, they have adopted their own internal policies about lobbying. And so you make sure that you're complying with your own county or city policies on lobbying. And the probably the most important thing that you need to think about, and this is why I encourage you to, you know, confer with your contracts department or, you know, talk to your legal counsel, is that because funding sources are layered, because we have so many different sources of funding that's funding our work, you always want to make sure that you're complying with the rules of that particular grant or that particular contract. And that's kind of the key thing, because you never want to lose your funding over something that was might be a simple mistake. And because, you know, funding right now is, it can be scarce for your organization, you know, your main priority is just keeping your funding. And so if your funding says you can't do lobbying activities, that's just when you might want to just re-strategize and think about what can I do that's not a lobbying activity, but hopefully gets across my message. One of the most important tips, if you do engage in lobbying activities, is that you keep really important time records. For those of you who receive federal grants, you're probably aware that, you know, you keep really meticulous records of your staff time. And some foundations require this too, but not a lot of foundations always require, you know, kind of time reports. But if you have some, it's really important to keep track of your time, especially if you're going to do lobbying activities, and to make sure that you've allocated the appropriate resources to that activity. One thing about federal grants, and this is an important tip, is that, you know, when you report to the federal government about what you did with that money, and you have the time records to show, and then you have, you know, maybe products or reports or something like that that kind of backs up what you do with that money, the federal government's under the obligation to kind of make a good faith judgment that that's what you did with the money. They can only come after you if they think for some reason there was some sort of fraud or you lied on your report. But if you kept accurate records of what you did, then they'll kind of take that for what it is. And the last thing is that, you know, standard time reporting is adequate. You know, if your staff just kind of fills out a timesheet and they kind of code it a particular way, then that's fine for the federal government. You don't have to do any, like, very detailed notes or anything about every single minute of your day. You just have to kind of keep pretty basic standard time reporting. Okay, so a quick wrap up, and then I'll take any questions. And if all of you are just zoned out from too much information, like you can always email me with questions or anything like that. But just a couple of things, you know. Again, lobbying is allowed. You know, if you do want to go out and do lobbying, go out and do it. It's more important to figure out whether or not your source of funding allows you to do the lobbying activity. The restrictions are all over the place. I mean, there's federal laws, state laws, local laws, and then there's a grant restriction. So you have to look at all the sources that there might be a restriction on lobbying. So that's why you sometimes would want to consult legal counsel. There are many allowable activities that you can do with federal funding or state funding that's not a lobbying activity. So, you know, go out there and you can do a lot of advocacy without actually spending a dime on lobbying activities. And again, you know, it is important to consult your legal counsel because there are so many different sources of funding and you just want to make sure you have it right. You don't need to consult your legal counsel every day, but it's just kind of the point where you decided, you know, I can't figure this out. I just don't know, you know, where to look or what to think about this kind of issue. Then it's just important to consult your legal counsel. Some resources. One is if you haven't seen the CDC guidelines on lobbying activities, let me know and I'll email that to you. There's another webinar out there. So my organization, Change Lab Solutions, in partnership with Feldman Tucker. Feldman Tucker is a private law firm in DC who specializes in federal grant contracts. We did a webinar back in July that went to a lot of detail about federal contract law. And if you want more information about federal contract law or you want a deeper understanding about federal contract law, then you can take a look at this webinar. There's two nonprofit organizations that I recommend you, if you want to look at more kind of strategies around advocacy. One is the Center for Lobbying in the Public Interest, and the other is Alliance for Justice. Both these organizations are based in D.C., and both of them provide a lot of support. They provide a lot of free information, free support. Sometimes they'll even provide free consultations. If you plan to do advocacy, and if you do want to do lobbying activities, they'll help you kind of figure out that. But these are the kind of main resources that I would go to in terms of, you know, trying to figure out your advocacy strategy. Last is my contact information. So if any of you have any follow-up questions, feel free to email me. I don't really do a lot of one-on-one technical assistance to organizations or government entities. I'm more like the in-house attorney for my organization. But you know, there's a lot of questions about advocacy, and there's a lot of questions about lobbying and Section 503. And there's a lot of confusion, but you know, I think the purpose of this presentation is to kind of just get you a little better feeling about lobbying and what's not lobbying. And to kind of help you grow if you're going to do some sort of advocacy campaign or do some sort of informational campaign, to kind of keep that going. And I think, you know, part of the government relations at APHA is to, you know, get people more encouraged to do this type of work because it's really important to communicate with government officials on these things. So feel free to, you know, email me some questions. I'll be happy to try to respond to you as soon as I can.